little flute music from Aihiwaniwa Tuiruru Kotari Kaitiaki Magellanic Thundersong, my beautiful Native American aromatic cedar flute made by Odell Borg of High Spirits in Patagonia, Arizona. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson welcoming you once again to On the Brink Radio. This is broadcast number 242, being recorded on the 29th of March. I'm sitting on the sea cliff about a meter from a 30 or 40 meter precipice down into the ocean off the north shore of the southeastern side of the big island of Hawaiki. I'm watching giant waves crash against the cliff and splash up almost to my eye level. This is a very powerful place, and I'd really want to extend my beautiful thanks to my friend Wally Patch and Robert Bogle, who are giving me the by far the coolest place I've ever had to stay in Hawaii, and one of the nicest places ever, probably second only to my beautiful cottage on Aotea, New Zealand. But this, like Aotea, is a very powerful place of encountering whales and dolphins, although I haven't been here long enough to see any yet. They come right by. This is right on the humpback whale migration path. Wally says that they, every year the whales come and go, literally just a few hundred meters or less right off, that you can see from his deck and from where I am right now. And he amazingly said that, I guess it was a couple of years ago, that a pod of, I think he said 16 orcas came up really close. And I know that they're pretty cosmopolitan. They can be found anywhere on the planet, but I always thought it was kind of unusual for them to be in sort of subtropical waters like Hawaii. Anyway, but this place is a sacred place of guidance from the whales and dolphins, and I really feel their presence here. I don't need to see them to know that they're there and that the beautiful psychic and spiritual connection exists, not only just with me, but with everyone and all of life, but especially the people who consciously love them and are working and acting on their behalf to try to create awareness in them, what's left of the mind of humanity about who they are as fellow beings and what the real global threats to them are. That's the main topic of the show, which is called Whale and Dolphin Strandings: The Complexity of Reality, Delusion, and Disinformation. These are topics that are not a stranger to my radio show, but I've really felt the need to focus specifically on whale and dolphin strandings, because there just seems to be, on my personal radar, a lot of them happening lately. And again, one of the dynamics I'll talk about is, and of course it's a given, we only know about that which we know about. But when you think about how we know about whale and dolphin strandings, very rarely are any of us in the exact location for one, where one happens, so that we are experiencing it firsthand. Like everything else that we don't experience firsthand, we're getting it as second-order information through a very complex network or chain of information transmission, and subject to all the idiosyncrasies and peculiarities that these forms of information transmission operate on and tend to accrue the further you are removed from the original source, kind of like that game called Chinese Whispers. So any strandings of whales or dolphins that we learn about are certainly not the only ones that have happened. We don't really have any way of knowing how many happen on any given day or in any given location. It's almost random that many of them are discovered and reported. because if you think of how many miles of the world's coastlines are uninhabited and not even looked upon on a daily basis by people, it would probably be the vast majority of it. If you think of the size of Eurasia, the size of Australia, the size of South America and Africa, and what vast expanses of coastline would exist in these areas that are totally unpopulated. So there could be massive whale and dolphin strandings that occur that we just never know about at all. But just in the past week or 2 weeks, there's been a lot on my radar, which is what's prompting me to do this show. People want to, in our oversimplified soundbite reality of today, we want to know what caused the whales or dolphins to strand. And it's not a totally illegitimate question, but it's not really the best question to ask, because it's similar to asking what causes people to die. It's almost on that same level. It could be a million different things. It probably is. And ultimately, you could say death is what causes people to die. But I'm not trying to be funny about something that's very, very, very serious. We're talking about the lives of myriad beautiful fellow beings on Mother Earth who have been here far longer than us, and in the exact same way that the indigenous people of Australia, who I happen to know and love very dearly, and not to mention them to the exclusion of other indigenous people, but in the same way that the indigenous people of Australia lived in total harmony with the earth, measured in the sense of their own sustainable existence and their own maintenance of health and law and social structure and spiritual cosmology, they maintained all these beautifully for probably at least 100 or maybe even 200,000 years. We don't really know, but it's a really long time. And in the same way, the whales and dolphins, who I think of as the ultimate indigenous people, have been able to live in a more or less complete harmonious balance in the ocean for, well, zoologists and paleontologists tell us that they've been here in their present form about 30 million years. So that's a long, long time. And it's probably not accurate to say that Homo sapiens, i.e. man the wise, is the only real threat that's ever inflicted itself on them, but it's probably the only threat arising from another species of life on the same planet. So why do whales and dolphins strand? Why do people die? What I'm going to do in this show, I'm not going to try to give a definitive answer. I'm going to mention and discuss a list of various possibilities, beginning with the more, what I consider to be the more absurd and ludicrous ones, and sort of all along the way comment on the denial and delusion that seem to characterize the modern human mentality. In fact, when you sort of look at this whole thing, the whole story of whale and dolphin strandings and the stuff that people say about it and claim, what the public has been led to believe, what they all accept is true, what the quote-unquote officials or experts who are called on to comment on and give explanations, the kind of things they say, all of this is a testament to human denial, delusion, stupidity, greed, ignorance, all the spectrum of just characteristics that have really pushed me away from my own species in recent years. before I go into these different causative or contributing factors to whale and dolphin strandings, first we have to distinguish between live strandings and strandings of dead ones. Or, I mean, you know, and everywhere, like, you know, it's very complex. The reality is complex. There could be a number of whales and dolphins that wash up. I mean, and I think interspecies strandings are very rare. Very rare, in fact. But usually, if some whales or dolphins wash up, either it's possible that they could all be alive, or they could all be dead, or some are alive and some are dead, and some live long enough to be rescued or get refloated, and then some die while they're there. All different levels of the above. But the emphasis is on, for all the strandings, is to try to understand, not just for the sake of purely academic understanding, the reasons behind the stranding, but to look at the possibility of anthropogenic factors that might be possibly eliminated or lessened through our awareness, but also with emphasis on the proper way to respond to and treat and take care of whales and dolphins that have stranded that are still alive. These are two of the main topics. But before I go into all that and the list of causes, I'll just tell you that about 2 weeks ago, well, this is something that I talked about in my broadcast last week. I just got done having a social media exchange with a woman. I called her a chick. That's what part of the last email was about, the gender-specific casual reference terms. All that's come and gone. So I'll just refer to chicks as dudes now. Anyway, there was this female dude claiming to be a dolphin activist and advocate who was glorifying this, what New York Times wants to call an Einstein of the oceans, but he's really more like an Edward Teller of the oceans, Walter Monk. And I was kind of giving her some criticism and cognitive dissonance because of her, I can only use the word stupidity for someone who would glorify one of the masterminds of some of the greatest damage that humans have wrought in the ocean, glorifying this person as someone who loves dolphins. I no sooner got done with her than I got an email from a woman here on the Big Island saying that she had been listening to the Jupiter Foundation Hydrophone Network of humpback whale songs, and that for the first time in the months that she'd been listening for hours every day, she heard what she thought sounded like really loud explosions happening under the water. And this, she hadn't heard it before. And she also said that there was a lot of absence of whale and dolphin sounds, of whale singing that she would normally hear a lot. And of course, we were the first to admit that there could be other factors other than it may not necessarily be the military operations that we instantly suspected that it might be. But we ran this past my friend Douglas Webster, who's a big-time dolphin-loving person here on the Big Island, and he confirmed that he had seen a lot of military aircraft flying up the same way, up the west side of the Big Island, headed towards Maui in recent weeks. So anyway, that kind of made us all realize something that's never far from my mind anyway, but the pervasiveness and ubiquity of especially undersea military activity, because that's why they do it. That's why submarines exist, because you can't see them. They could be anywhere, and they're hard to detect. And a big part of the whole thrust in the modern Navy and of undersea warfare is the detection of enemy submarines and the stealth cloaking of your own. And these technologies themselves are one of the greatest threats to the well-being of all life in the ocean. We'll get to that later. But right at the same time as this complex of events here on the Big Island that seem to be leading up to RIMPAC, the giant, largest naval war game that happens on this planet, is coming up in June, all around the Hawaiian Islands, which are without a doubt the most heavily militarized ocean regions on the whole planet. Around the same time, we get word that there was a stranding of a pygmy whale and its baby on King Island, Tasmania, which is about halfway up Bass Strait between Tasmania and Melbourne, or Adelaide. And that we were able to roughly correlate with an Australian Navy operation happening primarily off the coast of New South Wales, but it was around that same time. So that possibly could have been related. Then we see 165 whales, I believe they were pilot whales, washed up on the beach at Augusta, Western Australia, which is down south, south of Margaret River. Very beautiful area. Been there a few times. And so my good friend Edward Johnson, who I'd really like to thank for his vigilance and ongoing good work on behalf of the whales and dolphins, he lives in the coast of Oregon. He pointed out that there was a that there's a region of major hydrocarbon exploration right off the coast of Augusta. And my beautiful friends at Stranded No More pointed out that also there appeared to be an operation of laying undersea cables in that same area. Then, also thanks to Stranded No More, in the UK, there was a adult sperm whale that washed up, and apparently all the organizations and the scientists involved think that this was some kind of, that was a first for the world, because the scientist or veterinarian or whatever he was went and supposedly conducted an autopsy of this whale on the beach, and he was complimenting the people that used this large crane in order to move it, and how this guy actually, he emphasized that he needed crampons, you know, which is what you use for climbing on ice. They're like spiked things that you put on the bottom of your shoes. He needed crampons for climbing up the whale so he could extract blubber samples. That's what he said. So it was like, in this whole article, there was no mention, not even remotely, of acknowledging the existence of this fellow being that had died. And no, I mean, when people talk about the strandings, it's always, oh, it's a shame and things like that, but almost nobody recognizes or acknowledges the passing of beautiful fellow spirits. But I mean, they don't even do that for people that have been gunned down in Syria or Palestine. It's all just this abstract spectacle of entertainment. We're so used to having all these things emblazoned on the mind screen of our retina that we become so desensitized to everything. It's as if we, as a whole, we don't even have the will or the drive or the motivation or even the ability to actually seriously address or even recognize issues of real importance in the world. We're too busy being distracted by all our trivial look out for number one things that I always criticize so heavily in my fellow man and woman. Anyway, I'd really like to thank my friends at Stranded No More for their beautiful ongoing work along the lines of mapping and creating awareness and information about the whales and dolphins and the real global threats to them, and constantly providing almost immediate updates whenever any information about a whale or dolphin stranding becomes available. They're always on it, almost always a step ahead of me. And they're reporting their analyses and common sense, pragmatic perspective on the best way to deal with stranded whales and dolphins and what should not be done, and to a good amount of ridicule of the complete bullshit that characterizes this whole operation in most countries. And also, they've lately been addressing the issue of captivity quite a lot, and how much attention that's getting, to the exclusion of properly caring for whales and dolphins that have stranded alive. I've done two in-depth interviews with Stranded No More, and getting ready to do a third one here soon. But I strongly recommend that you read those. One of the most important things that they made clear was that a study was done to test this a few years ago, and they determined that for any stranding event, the number of whales or dolphins that we see washed up is probably less than 8% of the total number who were injured or harmed during whatever caused this event. This is assuming that the stranding was because of something happened to them, rather than the possibility of their... Of course, one of the reasons that strandings could happen is because they're dying a natural death and wanted to go ashore so that they didn't drown, which is one of the valid reasons that some strandings could happen. But the point is, most of them we don't know about. And whenever you're weighing in the existence of anthropogenic causes in this whole equation, it makes it all the more brutal on our part to not even know the damage and destruction that we're wreaking. I'm going to go down the list of why whales and dolphins strand. This is not exhaustive, not comprehensive, but it's just a few off the top of my head. But I'm starting with the most, to me, incredulous and totally unbelievable reasons. One of them was that the whales and dolphins are sacrificing themselves. And the woman that wrote this, I won't say her name, doesn't specify sacrificing to whom or specifically why, but they're sacrificing themselves for us so that we can see how badly we're treating them. I don't know, it didn't make sense at all. But there's people that believe this. They're sacrificing themselves. It's very Christian. It's very along the lines of that Jesus gave his life as the only Son of God to save us. It's very much like that. So if you buy that, you'll be fine with this. Then there's another one by another person whose name I won't mention. Maybe I'll give the names of these people and some quotes of their work in my blog posting. This woman had a book called, part of the subtitle was Before We Leave You. And that's what the whales and dolphins were saying, like that they were going to leave the planet. They're all like, you know, they're just going to die. They're going to up and die for some unexplained reason and leave the planet to us. And I went like, well, you know, if the only way that could make any sense at all would be if they were all just kind of like washing up and dying for no apparent reason that could be discerned. But I don't think that's the case. So there's a difference between the whales and dolphins leaving the planet because they're dying of their own accord versus leaving the planet because they're dying because we're killing them. It's not the same thing. But this is an example of how this mentality can't distinguish between these two different aspects of what they're talking about. And then this relates to a third possibility. People have said, oh, well, the whales and dolphins are committing suicide. And, you know, it's possible. I mean, all of these things are possible. I'm not saying that they're not possible. I'm just saying, like, I don't tend to believe them very much. Don't give a lot of credibility to it. But the full spectrum of all the reasons whales and dolphins strand and have stranded in the past and will in the future, it could include all of these and heaps more reasons that we not only don't know, that we can't know, we wouldn't even be capable of understanding even if evidence was presented right in front of us. But committing suicide, you know, highly evolved beings are capable of a wide spectrum of mental states, moods, patterns of behavior, and we do know that humans commit suicide. In fact, it's not an uncommon thing at all. It's even, in some cultures, it may be kind of like an accepted thing to do. I don't know. That may be wrong, but it's very common, and it's very sad, and I'm not rationalizing or justifying it. But the point is that if humans are capable of committing suicide for whatever reason, the whales and dolphins may be too. And then that, the reasons the whales and dolphins would do it may be just as vast as the reasons people would do it. A, primarily that they didn't want to live anymore. But like I was saying before, some of the strandings of whales and dolphins may be ones that are, maybe they're old, or they're sick, or they're just tired of living. You know, they're sort of like, but there's no old folks home for them to go in, like people have, for, you know, people that are able to afford being taken care of in an old folks home. We don't have that for whales and dolphins, and so the fact that they also have to keep swimming so they can breathe, or else they'll drown and suffocate in the water, it's only logical that if they feel like that they're going to die, or they want to die in peace, they'll find a nice quiet beach to wash up on and just lay there for a few days and pass away. And I can't imagine a more peaceful way to die than lying on a beach. But this is if you're undisturbed. And so, having said that, it could be that some of our attempts to rescue stranded whales and dolphins may be against their wishes. But we have absolutely no way of knowing this. And I think it's probably wise to err on the side of caution and to try to help and refloat and rescue any of them, simply because we don't know why they're there. But sometimes, and I think this has been witnessed many times, including an experience that I had in Australia about 13 years ago, that sometimes when dolphins and whales are rescued and successfully refloated, they'll come right back out and strand again. And so, who can explain that? So all of this is part of the complexity of the reality. I'll tell this brief little story about something that happened to me in 2005. I was in a town south of Byron Bay, New South Wales, called Yamba, visiting an old friend of mine. And Gary comes up and he goes, Jeff, we have to go down to the beach. Two dolphins have stranded. And I go, what? And he goes, like, yeah, it's really rare. I don't think they'd ever seen any dolphins strand there before. And so this had happened a couple hours before, and they had taken the dolphins and put them in a swimming pool filled with seawater that was really close to the ocean there. And it was a male and a female of a species called Rissos, R-I-S-S-O-S. And now what I'm about to say, this is just in my mind and heart that it happened, and it's just crossed my mind. I'm not saying that this is what happened, but it was just uncanny and really freaky what I felt. But I went down there and saw these two dolphins. And my mom and dad had just got killed in a car wreck less than a year before. And I thought about them a lot and really felt their presence. And when I saw these two dolphins, I don't know why, but I really felt that it was my mom and dad that were in the body of this male and female dolphin. And the female was larger, and the female came over to me really close. And some people were in the water taking care, holding them up and stuff. And I didn't get in the water, but the female dolphin came over really close to me, and I felt a very powerful connection with her. I'm not going to say that I thought it was my mom, but like this didn't really hit me till later. But thinking back on it, I'm like, you know, it did seem like my mom and that dolphin. And the other, the male dolphin, wouldn't come near me. He stayed on the opposite side of the pool. And I go, well, if that was my dad, that would make sense, because he knew he wrote me out of the will, and there's a lot of animosity that I felt between him and me at the time he died. Even though I was in Australia and he was in America, I felt this psychic connection. Anyway, but in my mind, I went like, well, what if the guardian angels asked my mom and dad if they wanted to do two things at once, and A, be able to come and see me again before they really left on their long journey, and B, know what it was like to be a dolphin. And so I go like, you know, as I understand God and the Great Spirit, Lakhan Tanka and my guardian angels, something like that would not only not be impossible, it would be easily done. And I've just really thought about this. But what if? What if my mom and dad were able to come back and see me one last time as dolphins? Because they had known ever since 1980 how much I loved them. And I think they were always curious about the dolphins. So what if they got to be dolphins for X amount of time? I'll never know, but it's a very freaky story. But anyway, I had to leave, but I was told that they successfully released and refloated those dolphins, but that they stranded again the next day or 2 days later. And so I don't know what ultimately happened with them, but they seem to be in okay health, but, you know, it's hard to tell. The most common reason given, especially on social media and in mass media of any kind, for anomalous whale and dolphin strandings, which really they all are, is the quote-unquote mystery illness. The mystery illness. Because the articles always say, scientists are baffled at what could have caused these whales and dolphins to strand. It must have been a mystery illness. And sure, it's not impossible, because whales and dolphins are mammals, they're life forms like us, and they could surely get sick just like we could, although they probably don't nearly as much as we do, but we just don't really know. We don't know that much about them, really. But there's a disease called Morbillo virus that supposedly they found in dolphins in the Gulf of Mexico. So it's probably true that they can get sick. They can get illnesses. They can get parasites in their inner ear. Or I speculated to Ian Kerr of Ocean Alliance that it's possible they could have a syndrome sort of like a cetacean version of Alzheimer's disease, where they've got cognitional impairment due to heavy metal and chemical toxicity. Now, Stranded No More said that they had never thought about that or never heard of it, but, you know, I'm just saying, I think it would be possible. Even though, according to Dr. John Wise, who analyzed a lot of the samples taken from Ocean Audit, Ocean Alliance's five-year survey of global ocean toxicity, he observed that he thought the whales and dolphins had a more powerful ability to deal with toxins at the cellular level than we do. Not that they were immune to poisoning, but that cellularly they had a much more highly evolved system that prevented the dangerous substances from interfering with their metabolic processes. So when Dr. Roger Payne, in his awesome book Among Whales, talks about the incredible amounts of pollution, of chemical toxicity in the ocean, persistent organic pollutants, PCBs, and that there has been whales and dolphins found that had 10 to 30,000 times the level that would be considered to be toxic for humans, and they were still swimming around. And I don't know what their cognitional experience was like, or if their physical health was as robust as it should be. But again, these are just things that we don't know and we can't know. I strongly suggest that you read Ocean Alliance's report on their survey of global ocean toxicity. To me, it's one of the most important things that they've ever done. So one of the things we're leading up to is that there may not be one specific cause for any stranding event, but more likely a constellation of causative factors that would be constantly varying and in action at any given time. But it could be that in the same way that the background noise level in the ocean has risen by, well, this figure, the figure of 12 dB, is quite a few years old, so it would be a lot more than that now. And in the same way that the noise level has risen, so has the level of chemical toxicity and also toxicity from synthetic radionuclides, which is something that even I haven't been talking about much lately. But we know that ionizing radiation does affect the brain. If it affects the brains of people, it would affect the brains of whales. And there's no shortage of synthetic radionuclides in the world's oceans, especially in the exact piece of ocean that I'm looking out into right now, north from the Big Island, right directly up into the Fukushima blast zone. So the whales and dolphins could overall be experiencing a gradual degradation of cognitive function in the same way that I see that happening in the human population. Now, another reason I see given for whales and dolphin strandings is that they got lost. And again, it's not impossible. I mean, you know, if people can get lost, so can whales and dolphins. But whales and dolphins, especially the ones that are migratory species, have been doing this for tens of millions of years. And so it's not likely that they're just going to get lost. I mean, there could be other factors, you know, like sometimes they say that they got stranded because they were in shallow water and they misestimated the tide, and the tide went out, and then they got stuck, or they took a wrong turn, and then leading into another explanation that a lot of whales and dolphins, especially pilot whales, they tend to be very social species, and they, whatever a few of them do, all of them will do, kind of like sheep. They'll follow the leader, and if one strands, they all will. Where if one sacrifices himself, they'll all sacrifice themselves. I mean, this is how the thinking goes. Who knows? Any of these could be possible. Now we're moving gradually towards slightly more plausible explanations that are kind of scientifically credible to a degree. There was the explanation, and apparently they just did a NASA-funded group did a study, and then its findings were refuted, or they concluded that indeed solar flares or geomagnetic storms in the Earth's atmosphere originating from disturbances in the sun, that these could affect the ability of whales and dolphins to navigate. And this is not implausible, and it could be a minor contributing factor for all we know. But it's not likely to be a major factor, again, for the very reason that they've been doing this for so long. They're astronomically more superbly adapted to their environment than we are. We've only been here a million years in our present Cro-Magnon form, we believe, whereas if they've been here 30 million years. And another reason that might relate to the follow the leader thing is a lot of whales and dolphins might be subject to what Strandon and Moore calls a panic reaction. And the panic reaction could result in a fight-or-flight behavior where they might just try to instantly get away from where they were as quickly as possible without rationally considering where they were or the direction they were going. A panic reaction, you know what it's like if you panic, you just sort of freak out and lose it and do unexpected things that may not even be in your own best interest. So, but the key with a panic reaction is what we see might be the result of what the whales and dolphins did when they panicked. But what we're trying to get back to is what would have triggered the panic reaction. This could have been a large number of things, and here's where we get back to the complexity of this whole scenario. What could trigger a panic reaction in whales and dolphins? A sudden noise, an explosion, the sudden appearance of something big and scary. Things like that. You think of a sudden, unfamiliar, unexpected event or process. And now we're leading up to what I consider to be the real dangers behind the whole scenario, and the dangers that through a combination of psychological and socio-economic factors tends to get totally omitted, glossed over, rationalized, and denied is the impacts of anthropogenic military-industrial activity. And it's very well known that the whole science of public relations was basically founded to perform damage control for industrial activities. Like this coal mine exploded and all these people got killed. And so the Rockefellers hired this dude named Ivy something. Not League, but anyway, this was even before Edward Bernays, but this bloke concocted all these. First of all, they start out by talking about all the good stuff that the coal mine had done and all the good stuff the Rockefellers had done with their philanthropic institutes and all that stuff. And then they rationalize and minimize the dangers and the casualties from the accident. And that's exactly what public relations does, and that's exactly why you see anytime there's a whale or dolphin stranding, it's more than likely that the expert who gets called on to give the explanation draws on one or more of the reasons that I just listed. More likely, mystery illness, getting lost, panic reaction, follow the leader, maybe solar flares. Mystery illness is the biggest one. One of the funniest ones was that Edward Johnson brought this to our attention, this from the Albany Augusta stranding in Western Australia. This scientist said that it was wind, that the predominant winds this time of year would have caused the biosonar to bounce back. That's one of the stupidest and most ridiculous things I've ever heard. And this dude claimed to be an acoustics expert. But, I mean, in Australia, this could be true. The experts there are truly experts. Now we're getting to the real reasons that we need to consider. Because, like I've said, sure, whales and dolphins have always stranded throughout history. Aristotle wrote about it. We know they've always stranded. And so, for reasons that we may not know or can know. And it's not just one reason. It can include all of the things I've said and a thousand more. But the main thing we have to look at is the impacts of our anthropogenic military-industrial activity. Specifically, the pervasiveness and ubiquity of all the seismic testing for hydrocarbons that's going on all around the world. Part of my work is to quantify this. The military sonars, which are now becoming superseded in the microwave next generation undersea warfare scenario, but the LFA sonar emits giant explosions of sound, just like seismic testing, on the order of 200-240 dB. And they boasted that LFA sonar had a kill zone the size of Texas. And I don't think that's impossible. That's from one explosion of sound. So we've got this stuff going on all the time, and this is down in the ocean where we can't hear it. And if the public had access to an underwater hydrophone network similar to the thing the military created in the 1950s called SOSUS, S-U-S-U-S, and linked up to computer pattern recognition patterns so that every square mile of the ocean was being listened to, how much military-industrial activity would we detect? See, but now we're moving into the domain of the military and undersea warfare. This is highly classified because they don't want us to know what's going on under the sea, especially that they're doing. They want to detect the enemy, and they don't want us to know about all the stuff they're doing. But this information does exist. Naval intelligence would have the ears of the undersea at its command. So, for example, it is possible that a sudden detonation or explosion, whether it's LFA sonar or a blast from seismic testing or a rocket launch or a torpedo launch or a missile launch or any kind of ordnance disposal or anything like that, could theoretically send any whales and dolphins in the vicinity into a panic reaction, and or it could create hearing and other physical damage, either purely psychologically and or physiologically, depending on the level of the sound. So what's really going on is probably a combination of all of these things, and most of it's totally unmappable. We can't directly know. Stranded No More is doing the best job of anyone to give us maps that show where strandings occurred and what kind of military industrial activity was able to be detected in the proximity there. And it's always something. Always something. And with the next generation of undersea warfare, that it's really terrifying to think of how much of this stuff is going to be being used or is already being used in these exact waters that I'm looking at right here. All around Hawaii, all of her islands, especially around Pearl Harbor and Kauai, where the Pacific Missile Range facility is, with the largest amount of microwave transmitters on the planet. With Raytheon and Lockheed and Boeing and all these companies going to the next level with undersea warfare, this is creating a whole other scenario of damage to the hearing and the cognitional and sensory perception apparatuses of not only the whales and dolphins, but all life in the ocean. And that's why I classify Walter Monk as a true monster of the deep, a Frankenstein of the deep. And he's going to be the star of a radio show and blog posting that I'm doing of that same name, as is the woman working for DARPA, who's designed this part of what they call the ocean of things. It's to weaponize and turn all living things in a vicinity in the ocean into sensors so that they can not only detect information and energy from these life forms to detect enemy submarines, but also tweak or manipulate the life field forces of these beings so that they can tune the instrumental response as a surveillance weapon. Any environmental impact statement or Endangered Species Act, it's basically public relations. The Endangered Species Act used to mean something in the years after Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring was a big motivating factor for its creation. But if it doesn't have any teeth to enforce it, it's absolutely meaningless except as a way of getting funding for organizations that pretend to be enacting it. Environmental impact statements are just another business that organizations are paid a lot of money to do, and to say, oh yeah, this and that species is in danger, blah blah blah, but it's okay. The Navy can take 32 million whales and dolphins, but that's okay. It's not okay. We, Homo sapiens manda-wise, the species that I happen to be incarnated in at this time, are literally waging war on our Ohana Moana, our family of life in the ocean, all of Mother Earth, Mitakaye Oyasin. We're responsible for it. And what's even worse than the actual physical damage and trauma that we're inflicting across the full spectrum of life forms using our most advanced technologies as weapon systems, and most of it just because it's unknown or off the radar of the vast majority of people, does not lessen its impact, and it certainly does not lessen our responsibility for it. It's our responsibility to know and understand what we're doing, to do our best to try to stop it, to lessen it. Ultimately, I don't think it's going to matter. I think it's so far beyond our control. Mother Earth's going to have to take us out in the ways that she's done it before. But what's even worse, and it's taken us to the brink of our own self-termination, what's even worse than the physical damage is the spiritual desecration, the dishonoring, the beauty and power of Mother Earth and the right to live and the specialness of every little being, every fish and every whale and dolphin, every bird and every little insect, and every little flower, that they have just as much of a right to live as we do. Yet we act like everything is just a resource there for us to exploit and to consume. And if it gets killed or trampled on, it's just a shame. Our time is coming. Probably sooner than we think. And that's why I call the show On the Brink. Be ready for the Atlantean discontinuity coming soon to a planet near you. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson signing off. Many thanks to Stranded No More. It's possible that every whale and dolphin, if our priorities shifted and we invested a tiny fraction of the money that goes for weapons and nuclear missiles and underwater microwave systems, we could create a mobile network of hospitals, clinics that could be transported to where whales and dolphins strand by helicopter and take care of them with a fully educated team of medical specialists and treat them like people that had washed up. This could be done. It's not outside the realm of possibility, especially in very wealthy countries like Australia and New Zealand. If we did something like that, I can't think of any better way to show Mother Earth that maybe a handful of us should be kept for the next creation. Good day.